If, on the other hand, you think about that day you first changed a diaper, you might pause for a moment, scan your memory, and come up with an image of yourself nervously gripping a baby's ankle, then cringing at the mess you find in the diaper, then struggling to figure out what to do next. When you actively think about these images and emotions, then you're aware that you are recalling something from the past. This is also memory, but it's different from the memory that enables you to change a diaper now without thinking about it. These two types of memory interweave and work together in your normal everyday living. The memory that enables you to change your baby without knowing that you are remembering is called implicit memory. Your ability to recall learning to change a diaper or to recall any other specific moment is explicit memory. Usually, when we talk about memory, we mean what is technically explicit memory, a conscious recollection of a past experience. But we need to know about both kinds of memory for our own sake as well as for that of our children. By getting a clear handle on these two different types of memory, we can provide our kids with what they need as they grow and mature and deal with difficult experiences. Let's start by focusing on implicit memories, which begin forming even before we are born. Dan tells a story about an informal research study he performed in his own family.
When my wife was pregnant with each of our two children, I used to sing to them in the womb. It was an old Russian song that my grandmother had sung to me, a child song about her love for life and for her mother. May there always be sunshine, may there always be good times, may there always be mama, and may there always be me. I sang it in Russian and in English during the last trimester of pregnancy, when I knew the auditory system was wired up enough to register sound coming through the amniotic fluid. Then, in the first week after each child was born, I invited a colleague over for a research study. I know it wasn't a controlled study, but it was fun. Without revealing the prenatal song, I sang three different songs in turn. No doubt about it, when the babies heard the familiar song, their eyes opened wider and they became more alert, so that my colleague could easily identify the change in their attention level. A perceptual memory had been encoded. Now my kids won't let me sing. I probably sounded better underwater. My newborn children recognized my voice and the Russian song because that information had been encoded in their brain as implicit memories. We encode implicit memory throughout our lives, and in the first 18 months, we encode only implicitly. An infant encodes the smells and tastes and sounds of home and parents, the sensations in her belly when she's hungry, the bliss of warm milk, the way her mother's body stiffens in response to a certain relative's arrival. Implicit memory encodes our perceptions, our emotions, our bodily sensations, and, as we get older, behaviors like learning to crawl and walk and ride a bike, and eventually change a diaper. What's crucial to understand about implicit memory, especially when it comes to our kids and their fears and frustrations, is that implicit memories cause us to form expectations about the way the world works, based on our previous experiences. Remember the connection between ballet and bubblegum? Because neurons that fire together wire together, we create certain mental models based on what's gone on in the past. If you hug your toddler every evening when you come home from work, he'll have a model in his mind that your return will be filled with affection and connection. This is because implicit memory creates something called priming, in which the brain readies itself to respond in a certain way. When you get home, your son anticipates a hug. Not only is his internal world primed for receiving that loving gesture, he'll even move his arms in anticipation when he hears your car in the driveway. As he gets older, priming will continue to operate with more complex behaviors. A few years later, If a piano teacher frequently criticizes his playing, he may create a mental model that he doesn't like piano, or even that he's not musical. A more extreme version of this process occurs in the case of post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD, where an implicit memory of a disturbing experience becomes encoded in a person's brain, and a sound or image triggers that memory without the person even realizing it's a memory. Implicit memory is essentially an evolutionary process that keeps us safe and out of danger. It frees us to be able to react quickly or even automate our responses in moments of danger without having to actively or intentionally recall previous similar experiences. What all this means for us as parents is that when our kids seem to be reacting in unusually unreasonable ways, we need to consider whether an implicit memory has created a mental model that we need to help them explore. This is what Tina did for her son when she tucked him into bed and talked with him about the swimming lessons. Their conversation went something like this.
Can you tell me anything about what's going on with the swimming? I don't know, Mom. I just don't want to do it. Are you afraid of something? I guess. I've just got all of these butterflies in my stomach. So let's talk about those butterflies. Did you know that your brain remembers things even when you don't know you're remembering? I don't get it. Okay, let me say it a different way. Do you remember you had a bad experience with swim lessons before? Oh, yeah. Do you remember that place we went? They were so hard on us there. Those were some pretty strict teachers. They made me go off the diving board, and they dunked my head and made me hold my breath for a long time. It was a long time, wasn't it? And you know what? I think that has a lot to do with why you don't want to go to swim lessons now. You do? Yeah. Do you know that lots of times when you do things, whether they are good or bad, your brain and body remember them? So when I say Dodger Stadium, you're smiling. Do you feel what's going on inside you now? What are your brain and body saying? How do you feel? Excited? Yes. I can see that on your face. And do you feel butterflies in your stomach? No way. And what about when I say swimming lessons? Does that change how you feel? Uh-huh. And the butterflies are back? Right. I don't want to go. But here's what I think is going on. Your brain is amazing, and one of its important jobs is to keep you safe. See, your brain is always checking things out and saying, this is good, or this is bad. So when I say Dodger Stadium, your brain says, good, let's go. That's a fun place. But when I say swimming lessons, your brain says, bad idea. Don't go. Exactly. And the reason your brain gets so excited when I say Dodger Stadium is because you've had good experiences there. You probably don't remember every detail of every game, but still, you just have a good overall feeling about it.
You can see how Tina introduced this issue, just setting up the concept that certain memories can affect us without our awareness that something is coming from the past. You can also probably see why her son was nervous about swimming lessons. And one of the biggest problems was that he had no idea why he was nervous. He knew only that he didn't want to go. But when Tina explained where his feelings were coming from, he began to develop some awareness that let him take control over what was happening in his brain so he could begin to reframe his experiences and his feelings. They talked some more, then Tina introduced him to some practical tools he could use when he started feeling nervous about swimming lessons. Some of the very tools we'll discuss with you soon. Here's how the end of the conversation went.
Okay, so now you know that the reason for your fear is that you had bad experiences before. Yeah, I guess. But you're older and wiser now, and you can think about swimming in whole new ways. So let's do a couple of things to help you feel better. One is to start thinking about all the memories you have of swimming that have been really fun and good. Can you think of a good swimming experience? Sure, when I was swimming with Henry last week. Right, good. And you can also talk to your brain. Huh? Seriously. In fact, this is one of the best things you can do. You can say, Brain, thanks for trying to keep me safe and protect me. But I don't need to be afraid of swimming anymore. These are new lessons with a new teacher, a new pool, and I'm a new kid who already knows how to swim. So, Brain, I'm just going to blow out the butterflies from my stomach with some big, slow breaths like this. And I'm going to focus on the good stuff about swimming. Does that seem weird to talk to your brain like that? Kind of. I know, it's funny and kind of strange. But do you see how it could work? What's something you could tell your brain to make your body calm down and make you feel safer and feel good about going to swimming lessons? What could you say in your mind? Those bad swimming lessons were just in the past. Now this is a new swim lesson, and I already like swimming. Exactly. Because how do you feel about swimming in general? Great. Great. And now let's do one more thing. What's something you could do or say to your brain if you start feeling nervous again when we first get to swimming lessons? Like a code to help remind yourself that these feelings are from the past. I don't know. Kill the butterflies? Because the butterflies are from a long time ago and you don't need them in your stomach anymore, right? Right. I love it. And I'm glad you're laughing about it now, but could we come up with a less violent code? How about liberate the butterflies or free the butterflies? I kind of like kill. Okay, kill the butterflies it is.
Notice that the main thing Tina did here was to tell the story of where her son's fears came from. She used narrative to help his implicit memories become explicit and full of meaning, so they wouldn't act on him with such hidden power. Once his implicit memories about the unpleasant swimming lessons were brought into the light of awareness, he could more easily deal with his present-day fears. It's in this transformation from implicit to explicit that the real power of integrating memory brings insight, understanding, and even healing. Integrating implicit and explicit, assembling the puzzle pieces of the mind. Implicit memories are often positive and work in our favor, like when we fully expect to be loved by those around us simply because we've always been loved. If we count on our parents to comfort us when we're hurting, since they've always done so before, that's because a host of positive implicit memories have been stored up within us. But implicit memories can be negative as well, like when we've repeatedly had the opposite experience of our parents being irritated by or uninterested in our times of distress. The problem with an implicit memory, especially of a painful or negative experience, is that when we aren't aware of it, it becomes a buried landmine that can limit us in significant and sometimes debilitating ways. The brain remembers many events, whether we're aware of them or not. So when we have difficult experiences, anything from a twisted ankle to the death of someone we love, these painful moments get embedded in the brain and begin to affect us. Even though we're not aware of their origins in the past, implicit memories can still create fear, avoidance, sadness, and other painful emotions and bodily sensations. That helps explain why children, as well as adults, often react strongly to situations without being aware of why they are so upset. Unless kids can make sense of their painful memories, they may experience sleep disturbances, debilitating phobias, and other problems. So how do we help our children when they're suffering from the effects of past negative experiences? We shine the light of awareness on those implicit memories, making them explicit so that our child can become aware of them and deal with them in an intentional way. Sometimes